Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here today to have a different topic. We've been doing all these expectation shows, but now we're going to talk about the Ravens pass rush today. And here to join me is Daniel Mills. Daniel, how you doing? Doing great. You're from way out there in British Columbia, our first British Columbian guest that I'm aware of. And you coach high school football out there? All right. You're a secondary coach.
That's correct. Yeah.
All right. You can expand on your answers. You don't have to be as terse as you seem to be here. That's fine. Sure, yeah. But that's great. Tell folks initially on Twitter, where can they talk football with you?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at @coach_Mills_. So there's my last name, just MILLS. You can find me, shoot me a message.
Lots of fun. But Daniel, it's a guy I met on Twitter, came to me with an idea in the classic kind of a film study short way, wanted to talk about the pass rush. He also had some ideas about talking about the secondary. So we're probably looking at two shows here, but the pass rush is what we're going to talk about today. One of the interesting things about this pass rush is we can tell you what it was like last year with Wink Martindale. I think it's going to be very difficult for people to predict exactly how it will differ with Mike McDonald.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the changes, subtle or not subtle, but I'm looking forward to
outstanding. So I want to let you drive the show here in terms of what you'd like to talk about. So what's the first topic you want to talk about in terms of, you want to talk numbers? Do you want to talk deception? What would you like to talk about? Okay. Sure. I have pass rush by numbers for the Ravens last year, if you want to hear some of that, but why don't I get these all percentaged out, because I don't have that the way I should hear, but it'll take me about 30 seconds to do so. So in terms of numbers, what are you looking to see?
When they bring six and more guys, right? Because I like to see that percentage come down a little bit, because I often see that when we bring in six guys, seven guys, right, often one more than they can protect, we're not seeing those consistent one-on-one wins. And that results to guys getting exposed in the secondary, quarterback having too much time and finding those gaps and those busted coverage.
Okay, so in terms of rushing four, you can rush four or you can rush four in terms of having a very deceptive zone blitz that you might overload one side with two dropping The Ravens are certainly more than capable with their outside linebacker core of dropping certainly. Those guys. In terms of a plain vanilla four-man rush, what kind of percentage are you thinking might be appropriate?
Numbers wise, I'm not too sure. I would like to say maybe more of the 55-50-ish percentage wise. I think we're often seeing, I would say, too much blitz. Often, I'd say it's 65-70% we're seeing the blitzes, or you know, bringing six plus. We can now cut that down just a little bit. I think we're probably seeing some more effective results here.
Okay, so it looks like the Ravens, they didn't bring five as often as maybe you would think this last year. And I've got the number here really quick. It's 221 out of 652. Totally. 33.9%. And my denominator is always a little different from other published services because I don't include the penalties. We have some different definitional things about what's considered a passer. That always comes in. But if you look at other services, they're like 31.1% or they're in the same range anyway. So 33, while it was one of the higher ones in the NFL, like fifth, sixth, seventh in that range among NFL teams, does not seem that high. Do you think that this secondary is particularly built so that they should be taking advantage of more four-man pass rush?
I would say so. I mean, especially this year moving forward, where we have Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Williams coming in, right? Two natural ball-hawking safeties. So I would say definitely use that to their skill set and let the guys get that rush on. And the former up front get the rush. And then you have those two ball hawking safeties, those Chuck Clark and the dime maybe. And you have those guys just tracking the ball down, playing for a tip or an overthrow, and creating some turnovers for sure. Especially with, not to mention, Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey, of course.
Yeah, so Marcus Peters is a guy who's definitely feeds off the ability to gamble. So very smart, cerebral player on the back end there. And I've already hypothesized, I think this is going to be a great cover three team. With Marcus Peters taking the back end on the right side, right side from the offense's perspective, I guess that's left cornerback. But his ability to know what the blitz call is, or know what the pass rush call is, and know, hey, this is my opportunity to gamble here, it could be something that really will produce additional turnovers. Not to mention all the opportunities they have with having two legitimate free safeties to get them up.
Just to build on that point there. Marcus Peters, if he knows where the rush is coming, he also knows where the ball is going to be up hot, right? So if he knows it's going to be into a slot, a quick seam, quick hook, he's just going to jump it right away and go right to there. Totally.
Yeah, that's great point. And his interception against Cincinnati 2 years ago was just such a play. He said, "I knew what the blitz call was, so I knew I could gamble by jumping that route underneath," and he did. That was sure enough, pick six.
In Cincinnati, right? In Cincinnati, yeah.
We're talking about. Yeah. That's the one. So that's the one. The one against Seattle was more a case of him baiting Wilson to make that throw.
If I remember correctly, I think he said in a post-game interview he had seen that route combination before when he split with the Rams that a week or two earlier. Mm-hmm. So he had recognized it and knew that if he had bailed on that deep route, Russ would come back to that short route. And he just jumped it and just went.
Totally. Yeah. Definitely, he was the puppeteer on that play. But very, very, very different gambling opportunities for Peters in those two cases. So, you know, you really see a very cerebral player taking advantage of an opponent. Okay, just to go through this a little bit, the Ravens rushed a three or fewer on 6.5% of plays. They rushed four exactly on 59.7% of plays. And they rushed five plus on 33.9% of plays. Okay. That should add up to 100. I hope it does, and or 100.1 maybe. Totally. But anyway, they in terms of last year, the yards per play were best when they rushed six. This is not a good season for the Ravens, obviously, when the numbers look like this. But when they rushed three, they gave up 8.4 yards per play. When they rushed four, they gave up 7.2 yards per play. When they rushed five, they gave up 7.3 yards per play. When they rush six, they give up 6.3 yards per play. That you can live with. And when they rush seven, they give up 8.2 yards per play. So those cover zero did not work out. And I would, because of it's lower numbers, it's only 48 and 21 plays on six and seven, I would tend to combine those. And then you get a pretty similar number in that 7 yard range.
And I think something that could really help out, kind of a mid-season addition, if you will, would be David Ojabo coming back, whether it be late October, mid-November, whenever. They're saying he's going to come back, but he's more of that pure pass rusher that Owe wasn't last year, right? He provides that quick juice off the edge, and I think that can take more advantage of that with the four-man pass rush.
I mean, if you're going to have a four-man pass rush and you really want to rely on that as a straight vanilla four, you've got to have some one-on-one winners. You can have a guy, and I think Travis Jones, we'll see if he is that guy, but I'm excited to think he might be, that has a quick enough first step that he can command a double team inside. Blocking schemes will work out from him. It'll prevent the guard from making a bailout block to help a tackle. That should help create some opportunity there. But of course, it's not the only way the Ravens have gotten pressure in the past. They've used a lot of schematic variation to find advantages as well.
Exactly. Yeah. One thing I had in mind was Leroy twists and stunts. I know you've mentioned Ken before that Wolf, if he were ever to get back to his normal self, is great on that over, and then Oway would be coming on the under, and he's very good at that as well. But just natural stuff like that, those easy twists and stunts, as well as deception as well, right? So bringing the nickel off the edge, if you use the defensive end to shock that tackle so he doesn't see the nickel right away, shock him, bait him for a couple seconds, right? Get his focus off that nickel, and then when the nickel comes by him, the end then zooms out to that short zone there, take over.
Let me take a moment to go back. And so I want to treat those two things independently because they both deserve discussion. So let's talk about stunts first, because the Ravens have now collected a set of players who have some terrific quicknesses to be overs, but they've also got some powerful players who I think will be good under players. I think Travis Jones is going to be a decent under player. Campbell actually, even at his advanced age, has the ability to be both, but he's a terrific underneath player where he maintains that low pad level and gets between two blockers. And if either of them has to give up, it usually creates a good opportunity for the under guy there. So I love that. You know, you mentioned Wolf. I think he's probably a better under guy, in my opinion, than an over guy. But he does a fine job with that. Ajabo and Owe. Owe has the length to both be an under guy where he can be the first contact guy crossing the face of the tackle and hitting the guard on the opposite shoulder. And he can stunt for two gaps. So I'm loving what they do with that. But the ability these guys have to run twists and stunts, I don't remember ever being as excited about it as I am entering this year.
Yeah, and me too. I think it's going to, like I said, create a little more diversity in their pass rush. And then that way we're going to see better results for sure.
So going back to the early days of Ravens history, it's interesting. The Ravens in Marvin Lewis's time were running a tremendous amount of stunts out of four-man looks. And it's the player who did the most stunting per snap in Ravens history, this is the most times he used as an over. I always say this is the one of the best Ravens trivia questions of all, because nobody would know the answer. But it's James Jones, who was a nose tackle for the early teams between about 96 and 98. And that guy, I always wanted to have him on the show because he did something. There must have been something they really loved. He had a little bit of juice as a pass rusher. He had some sacks, but he had the quickness to do an over despite being an older nose tackle. And it was very interesting that he was used in that way. The Ravens have in for a lot of years, they probably did less stunting prior to Wink coming on board for most of those years. Did a little bit with Ryan, but most of the other defensive coordinators since Lewis have kind of done less of that. So I'm very interested to see this come back.
Totally. And I think I think Wink liked to bring the linebackers in law, obviously, right? With Patrick Queen the last couple of years, they probably used those interior linemen to crash either inside or out, and then he'll bring the backer behind them to get in that open lane.
Okay, Daniel, you're making a really good point there. And some of these points, I like to try and explain them further so that you're getting out of coach speak and we're talking to a normal football fan here. But the point Daniel's making is it's very difficult to twist and blitz on the same play. Usually it's one or the other. So your lineman is supporting a blitz from level two by his movement to one direction or the other. But if you start twisting, then it makes it difficult for a linebacker to find his hole necessarily and come up with safety, whoever it might be. And that's something that I think is lost on people, but Calais Campbell did a good video with the NFL a couple of years ago, and he's coming to Baltimore, and he said he can call his own stunt on field whenever he wants, as long as there's not a blitz already called behind him. And that tells you exactly kind of that concept, but it's good to bring that up.
All right. So then Yeah, kind of going back to that nickel blitz, right? This more sure. kind of art of deception, exactly, right? So I think the effectiveness would that be the nickel is usually already at in press coverage, so at line up 0 or 1 yards. He's usually about 5 to 7 yards away from the tackle. And he's also a lot quicker guy than the defensive end or whoever else would be on the line. So if you were to say, like I said, shock the tackle with a defensive end, meaning act like you're going to pass rush, maybe get a hand in his face, act like you're going to make some contact, and then bail out right away, that will give the nickel or the safety, whoever it may be, enough time to get off that line, rush the edge, and get past the tackle without him ever knowing he was there. And then it's up to whoever the running back, or if he's off, the pass pros on somewhere else, he's got a free shot at the quarterback. But that way, it's more ways to create pressure. Like I said, five-man, not so much a blitz, as more as a deception. And then you drop that defensive end in that low zone, maybe get a free pick with Owe or whomever it may be. But that's just different ways as well that we can get some pressure on there as well.
Yeah, limits the defensive end in some way. And again, you're speaking very fast, and I kind of want to re-explain this here. So this is something I associate with Jared Johnson from years ago, as being a guy who would get his hands on the offensive lineman, and he would basically freeze him, and he would almost then sometimes push off the offensive lineman to drop into coverage. You limit what that guy can do, and obviously he's going to be limited anyway because, hey, he's a defensive end, or he's an outside linebacker. He may even be a defensive tackle if you're – depending on how you're running this, if you're running it for a safety, say. There's going to be limited things he can do in coverage, but one thing that scares the bejesus out of a quarterback, or it should anyway, is a guy moving laterally in that short zone. Sure. So if he moves laterally, whether he knows it or not, he can be closing a window on the quarterback and has a chance to get his hands up. He's usually a tall man to start with. Think about Brent Urban or Calais Campbell doing this. In fact, back to the very first play of Calais.
Yeah, I was just thinking that the first game against the Browns in 2020, right? First drive, if I remember correctly. And right, he just stood there, shocked the interior guy, dropped in, got his hands almost on the ball, tipped, then Marlon got the interception on that. But
he was pissed. So he went to the ground. He pounded his fist at not getting that interception. Like, oh, wait, there's an interception.
that was
a great play. But that shows the power of lateral movement. I hope the Ravens will bring that back, because this is a great set of hands they've accumulated in the secondary with players like Hamilton and Williams back there. I think Clark has better hands than people give him credit for. But there's a lot of guys who can pick the football off, and this ought to be a lot of
naturally
fun.
Yeah, and like I said, you're a big fan of the tip and the overthrow, right? So this gives more opportunities for those sort of plays to happen for sure.
I want to talk more about the nickel blitz, because I think there's another component of that is how wide your outside rusher is aligned. It doesn't really have to be aligned wide, but he has to be speedy enough that he can fan out a tackle quickly.
Right. So you don't want to be obviously too inside, right? Because that way when you're dropping, you're almost useless, because you're not going to get to that zone anyways. But you also don't want to be too wide, because the eye side of the tackle will naturally be brought to that nickel. So you almost want to be kind of like, I'd say a yard and a half outside of that tackle there. Maybe give a quick jab step inside, get his body moving, and then shock him, push off him, whatever, and then buzz out.
Okay, so now you're talking about a drop to coverage situation, and absolutely love the idea. And in fact, any kind of bailout move that involves using the offense, the tackle's mass against him, like to push off is wonderful in that respect. I'm really talking about when you fan out that tackle. So it's Elvis Dumervil, think back to that. And he's fanning out that offensive tackle to create space. I like when the nickel has a B or C route he can take that he can choose as the play.
Totally, develops. Yeah. And I think one thing you can do with that is the rusher just kind of gets upfield right away, right? If he speed rushes off the edge, gets that tackle moving and turning his hips, and that way the nickel can come right off the edge there, the edge's butt, right in that B gap, and he's got a free shot to the quarterback.
Totally. Yeah. So that B gap blitz is something we've seen. Lardarius Webb is a guy I think of as being a great B gap blitzer, but the Ravens have had others too, because they've generally been very good. Tavon Young about blitzing off the slot there. Don't have to be a particular good guy, but it's a way to generate free runs. Yeah, a lot is done now around the NFL in terms of analytics, in terms of judging how quickly those pressures are occurring, whether they're happening within 2.5 seconds, as really seems to be the current standard, or I still score my offensive line play based on a 3-second standard. I think you get a lot of walk back pressure that occurs late. But if you've got a third and short as a defensive coordinator, what's the most important thing to do in terms of pressure?
If you've got a third and short, it's quick pressure right away.
Quick pressure. Yeah. So you want, and quick pressures are generated by general free runs, right?
Yeah.
So getting that nickel a free run at the quarterback through that B or C gap or B gap in particular is the freest run of all, or getting a linebacker to take, you know, just the briefest of delays before he finds that place is the way to get home. Very hard to win one-on-one quickly. You can do it occasionally, but you can't do it consistently.
You've also often have your first move and your counter move, whether it be a spin or a rip or whatever it may be. Be right. It doesn't often, not often you just blow by the tackle without him being a, if he's just a hedge back there, but
right.
Naturally.
Yeah. The one guy who's probably got the best chance to get a quick pressure. And I look at it as, getting into the cone of the quarterback where he's afraid to step into his throw normally, which immediately affects trajectory and timing and everything. Is that guard, that three tech who's got a one-on-one matchup against the guard. The guard is not typically your best pass blocker anyway. And then he gets him uncomfortable such that he either is pushing him back or he gets off one shoulder because of his initial move and counter, and he's close enough to the quarterback to start that he can get his hands up and create all kinds of problems.
Exactly. I think even if you just three tech setup, if he kind of bounces into that A gap as well, kind of gets right in the vision of the quarterback as well. That can often cause some problems too.
And there you're talking about like crossing the face of the guard. Yeah, that'll create an opportunity for somebody else. Generally speaking, that's a really good way to run your twists. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're going to do 100%. That. All right. So, in terms of what other maybe elements of deception, there's three I normally talk about. And twists and stunts are one. I think we've kind of covered that in terms of what we've done. Blitzes are another. Do you see this being a Ravens team that uses a lot of off ball blitzes like they did with Wink, or do you think we'll see less because they want to play slower trash compactor pressure and try and get more turnovers?
I would hope that would be the latter. I'm just not inclined to believe that quite yet, because I think Mike Donald did grow up in the system, right? So he still has a bit of that Wink Martindale blood in him. I know he had a little bit of diversity when he was at Michigan, so he probably brings some new life in that. But I would like to see a bit more of that, a bit more of the ladder there.
Do you think I'm one thing I'm always concerned about in terms of using 2021 as at Michigan for what McDonald will do in the NFL is he had like two of the five greatest pass rushers in all of college football. It's once you've got that,
it's an embarrassment of riches.
Embarrassment of riches, and how can you expect to duplicate what they did at the NFL level? I'm still amazed at Hutchinson having that 667 three cone. He has. I mean, just it's not a reasonable human trait for a guy who's
exactly. with such short arms too, right? So
yeah,
exactly. One other thing I was gonna point out was just alignment wise. So if you're gonna do that plain vanilla four man rush, without any twists or games or anything, it would be called the wide nine alignment, meaning that both of the edges or the ends are outside of the tackles, but both interior rushers are lined up in the B gaps, kind of in like a 4-eye or 3-tech, right? Meaning inside shade of the tackle or outside shade of the guard. And if you can even tilt sort of the lineman towards the quarterback to create more of a rushing angle. And what this does is that it creates all four one-on-one matchups, right? Meaning the center has to think more and think, okay, which way am I going to go? Which way am I going to create that double team block, which creates more time for those guys to win quick and win off the edge.
Okay, so now you're talking about four across the line of scrimmage, but extremely wide sets. So you'd only do this on a passing down where you had a fair amount of distance to the sticks.
So it'd be like a third and long, and third and 10 kind of thing.
Yeah, it's great. And then you're wide nine on one side and you're maybe seven on the other, and you're a 4-eye and on the interior. Even four-eye twice that's hard to do. So you might get two and 4-eye. So that's still would create for a bunch of one-on-ones out of that. Yeah. I like it. I think this defense is going to have some opportunities to dare opponents in that way. If they can generate leads offensively the way they did in 2019 and 2020, they can lean on teams in the second half with the secondary and generate a lot of turnovers, I believe. I think it's going to be really, I dare you to run the ball, given how little clock is left, is really the dare they're making. Because if you're two touchdowns down to the Ravens, you ought to be feeling very jittery about how you're going to come back against that defense to start with. And if the Ravens all of a sudden say, go ahead and run the ball, we're going to let you run the clock out on yourself if you want to. I think other teams are going to have some very difficult choices.
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, if the Ravens are going to be up at halftime, it also leans into the secondary stuff that we can get into obviously later. But yeah, it's all kind of all one big game. They're all intertwined, which is really, really cool to see.
Yeah, it's like pitching and defense in baseball. You can do all these things to try and separate them. It's just about impossible to do, folks. I'll just tell you, the pitching and defense are so closely related. You can't really separate the two. And the same really goes for the pass rush and the secondary play. If your coverage is working, you can do an awful lot. You can make a mediocre pass rush look very good. And if the same way you're going, if you've got a great pass rush, you can kind of make an average secondary look good as long as they can hold on to the
football. Exactly, yeah, totally.
All right, well, Daniel, tell folks you don't really write much, so you really only interact on Twitter. Is that correct?
I'm not a podcaster or content producer. I'm just I played college football after high school, and I coach high school football now. So I just enjoy football, and I love seeing the technique side of things and the schematical side. So I just like talking different areas of football, and I'm always up and open for a conversation.
All right, and it's Coach underscore Mills. That's correct, underscore. Yeah. Okay. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Daniel will have lots of interesting things to say, I'm sure. Where did you play your college ball?
I played in the University of Saskatchewan in Canada.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what I'm wondering about. Did you ever get any sniffing around from the CFL scouts with their 20 men Canadian rules?
No, I didn't. I didn't get any sniffs at the CFL. I'm just a guy.
Okay, but at your university, because there's relatively few places that play football in Canada, right? Relatively few.
Yeah, I think through all the whole country, there's about 25 or 27 universities that play at that level.
Yeah. Okay, and they're fueling 20 players on what, 12 CFL teams, or how many are there now?
Probably about nine. Yeah,
nine. Okay. So there's still 180 players they have to get from 25 schools in Canada. So there is a fair amount. You know, one of the things I've always said is it was an unfair advantage when Baltimore didn't have any limitations on Canadian players, because they were going out and they lose an offensive lineman. And if you're a Canadian team, you have to go, you know, and he's one of your 20 guys, you have to go to Edmonton, whatever, to find your guy. And if you're an American team, you get the best offensive lineman from Penn State, who's not currently in the NFL.
Yeah, no, that's one of the challenges of the CFL for sure. But I mean, it creates Canadian content, so can't be mad at that for sure.
Yeah. All right, outstanding, Daniel. Great having you on. I'm looking forward to our next show on the secondary, and I think that'll be a lot of fun. If you're out there and you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are open on Twitter. I'll get back to you very quickly, as usual. Narrow topic that we can go into depth in 20 to 25 minutes. Daniel, you're very terse. We've actually got done in just about 25 minutes, and I really appreciate that. We like to provide some shorter content for folks, and we still get some dense material in terms of some schematic stuff that you brought to the table. So really appreciate you joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.